Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Hawaii reopens, but a number of travelers apparently didn't get the memo about COVID tests. We tell you what's new flight-wise at Sacramento International, and we share a study that says it's very unlikely you'll get COVID on an airplane, especially if... Details next in the news.
Oh, you tease. At 3:20, we make you a smarter traveler with an updated Wi-Fi security warning from the FBI. Now, if you're doing any amount of work from a hotel and using their Wi-Fi, you need to consider some precautions and you need to listen to what's coming up.
Hawaii is indeed open. One of our road reporters returned to Oahu Thursday, the first day tourists with a test could be in town. Donnie Anderson joins us at 3:35 to walk through what arriving in the islands looks like now.
And Mark has a beef that has little to do with travel, but we'll give him a couple of minutes to share just one man's opinion at 3:55.
Thanks for joining the show that's all about the journey. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
To Alaska, I go north, the rush is on.
Oh, I was born a rambling man.
I come from a la-la-la-la.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Yes, sir, my friends. How are you? Mark and Tom here. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. As always, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for taking some time out of your day. Don't forget now, links to all the stuff we talk about. Where there is a link is at TravelGuysRadio.com, along with all other kinds of entertaining stuff that we'll be talking about during the program. Mark, good to see you again. How's things there at Sports Leisure Vacations? I know you got your hands full of all kinds of stuff, working on the new catalog that you're going to be releasing towards the end of the month and all. What's up?
Busy on doing everything except traveling.
Well, all right.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of used to be our business. Back in the olden days, we had travel companies that actually took people places. We're at work on planning some things for next year. At some point in time, people are going to start traveling again. And when that happens, our troops will be ready to go and we will be ready to go. So we're just kind of calling our catalog Take Two this year.
Take Two. All right.
Yeah. Well, because most of the stuff that's in it is things that we didn't get to do on the first time around and Take One of last year. So,
okay. Now, those that aren't regular Sports Leisure travel members and such, we want to take a minute or two, either now or later, to let folks know what kind of an event you're going to have. Because I know in the past you'd book a hotel, you'd have two sessions that would hold 500 or more people per pop, and present the catalogs and so forth. So, you know, I know you got some. You're going to do it a little differently.
We're just going to do kind of a drive-through and let folks watch presentations online, find out about new things online. And we're going to have a little fun here, too, for folks who want to get out of their car. And our event is on Halloween Day. So if ever there was an event made for the staff of my company, it's right. Halloween Day, because they're not that normal on a normal day. So... and myself included. So we'll just have a little fun. So if you are a Sports Leisure traveler, that's fine. And if you're wondering what these guys are doing, talking about this company that you've never heard of, just chill out for a minute. We're about to get to stuff that's actually important to the rest of the audience, too. This is really important, Tom. I saw this online. You're not planning a destination wedding for next year, are you?
No. Both of my daughters have done that, and destination weddings were a pretty big deal, you know.
Have you checked with your wife, Stephanie, to make sure that she doesn't have any plans for, I mean, I'm just saying.
Why are you asking?
I knew you would eventually get around to that cue. The people who run popular destination wedding spots say that things for next year are almost completely sold out. So apparently some people, they say that a lot of folks, what they did was they went ahead and went down to the Justice of the Peace last year and said, all right, we're married. And now we're still going to have our big to do, and we'll just do that when we can. And so almost everybody, of course, scheduled that for the next year, or people who had the ability to postpone their wedding, why, then they did. But of course, they were first on the book. So I've seen two articles in the last week that have come across my desk that just from our news feeds that say, if you're planning a destination wedding for next year, good luck, because a lot of people have already thought of it. So I thought, well, I just mentioned it on the radio. If you're planning a destination wedding, you best get on the ball, because 272,000 people have already thought of it before you, and places are running out. You know, cool places to have.
Right. You know, I have a theory about destination weddings. The people that choose them are ones that really don't want a bunch of people at their wedding. So they pick a place that's too expensive, too far away, too inconvenient. And then by the time you go there, you got, you know, a handful of people that had the money and a couple of family members, and the rest of them are just left. So, I mean, if you don't want to have to invite 200 people to a wedding, you have a destination wedding that's 2,000 miles away. That would cost you a lot of money to go and be at the wedding.
And that is just one man's opinion.
One man's opinion, right. Okay. And with that being said, at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel world. With that, here's Mark.
We might even talk about what's going to go on next week here on the Travel Guys. Paulette Bruce is going to join us. We're going to have a cooking show on the second half of the Travel Guys. So something kind of fun. And you can listen to it on the radio, Theater of the Mind type radio, or you can go to TravelGuysRadio.com right now. There's a spot there on the homepage where you can just fill out a question. Just in the subject line, put cooking class. And send us your email address, and we will send you back the Zoom information. And next Sunday at about 3:30 is when the second half of the program is when the cooking thing is going to take place. You can join us online. Paulette will be there. I will be with her. And you can join us. We have a couple dozen people signed up, and we have room for a couple dozen more. So if you wish, you can be online for the cooking class. And then afterwards, when the show leaves the air at 4 o'clock, the folks who are online with Paulette will be able to stay online and ask questions and whatever of her. We're going to do, an appetizer, and she's going to do a Thanksgiving side dish. So we only have half an hour. So her classes are usually a little longer than that. So we'll have a little fun next weekend and do something that a little simulcast with a live cooking class on the radio. You'll be in the studio and I'll be out there.
Yeah. And for those that are, you're strangely curious, you'll get a chance to actually see Mark on the Zoom. And if you didn't know what he looks like, you can see it, and you see his, cooking skills. So we'll call that.
Yeah. You can see his reclining forehead. I remember the old days of sports talk radio in town at KSAC. I remember, surely you had this happen, Tom. You must have done a million remotes in your day. And you go out, and the first person that walks up, the first thing they say is, gosh, you don't look anything like you sound on the air. And it's you know, what was I supposed to, to look like? Anyways, on the cooking class, if you want to join it on Zoom, it will be live on the Travel Guys, but if you want to join it on Zoom and be able to see it, go to TravelGuysRadio.com, fill out the form, and you'll be in business. We mentioned before that in the headlines that Hawaii has opened up, the rules are complicated, particularly if you're going to an outside island. If you're landing in Honolulu and then you've got to go to an outside island, fortunately, one of our Travel Guys reporters went over to Honolulu on Thursday, and Donnie has taped an interview with us yesterday, and so we are all good to go. We will be able to explain to you how to get into Hawaii in terms that perhaps you will even understand. Sacramento International Airport, thanks to Samantha Mott, who sent out a release last week giving us an update on all of the service changes, and there are some interesting things. JetBlue, which they've been providing overnight New York service for quite a number of years, is back. They've reinstated nonstop flights between Sacramento and JFK on Thursdays and Sundays. So just on those two days of the week, Thursdays and Sunday nights. You can get a nonstop from Sacramento to New York. And, of course, it comes back from New York City in the evening. So that's kind of convenient if you're in New York City. Pina coladas for Christmas, anyone? American Airlines is launching seasonal nonstop service between Sacramento and San Jose de Cabo Airport, the Cabo San Lucas Resort area. They will have a flight on Saturday during the Christmas and New Year's holidays. And then again, they will have a flight from mid-February into April. It leaves the Sacramento at 10 o'clock in the morning and leaves down there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So there are now several ways to get to Cabo San Lucas. And, of course, the new Valeros flight to Mexico City starts on November the 10th. So that's just around the corner. Leaves Sacramento on Wednesday and Friday nights. It's a red-eye, arrives in Mexico the following morning. And red-eye, the flights to come back to Sacramento leave Mexico on Wednesday and Friday evenings. Tickets are now on sale. Also, Samantha calls to our attention the fact that the far-out parking lot is still closed at Sacramento International, the economy lots. You can park in the what is normally called the A lot. They have reduced that to $10 a day. So you can park in there. Beware of the fact that you may have a ways to walk. They've restored the shuttle service now, but you may have a ways to walk. Yes, Thomas.
Okay, I was going to say, so the long-term lot is closed. Mm-hmm. I think that one was, the other one was referred to as like the daily lot.
The daily lot, that's it.
But and it had shuttles from there to the terminals. Are you saying that there are just fewer shuttles? Or
for a while there were no shuttles, but the last time I was out there we had shuttles again. So I think that's because that lot is fairly full now, and people are having to park quite a ways from the terminal.
Yeah, if you're way in the back there, it is a ways. But there are shuttles, or you can choose to walk to the terminal.
You can walk in, and of course the garage is still open, and they're still getting the premium. I think it's $18 a day to park in the garage. Remember, we always tell you, and I know there aren't as many people at the airport now, so life is a little easier. But guess what? There aren't as many people going through the airport passenger-wise, so there aren't as many people to help people go through the airport in terms of gate agents and security people and stuff like that.
Right.
So if you're going to the airport, make sure that you allow yourself plenty of time, even more so now, because, you know, if you're on the Southwest flight, there used to be 7 of them a day to your destination, and now there's only 3. So, you know, you might not be going for a while. So just allow yourself plenty of time. Remember, you can take your own hand sanitizer up to a 12-ounce container. It has to be outside of your carry-on bag. And also, if you bring food on your flights, there are some concessions open at the airport now. But if you're somebody who's bringing some food with you, put it in a clear plastic bag and put it in a separate tray so it'll be easier for them to screen. So thank you, Samantha, for those updates. Let's see here. We got a couple of other little news items. The government says that a new study says it is extremely unlikely to get COVID-19 on an airplane if. What do you think the if is, Tom?
Well, let's see. How about if you wear a mask?
Ah, you are a smart man. If everyone on the airplane is wearing a mask, your chances of getting COVID on the airplane is 1 in 3.5 million. Now, I don't know how they came up with that, but let's admit something. This has been all over the planet for a long time, and except for one case in South Korea where they were able to track back to somebody who was infected and had indeed infected a bunch of people around them because they had the tracking and tracing there, there have been precious few reports of people getting off of an airplane and finding out that they had COVID, you know, and being able to track it back to the airplane. So the fact that these HEPA air filters do hospital operating room jobs of filtering the air, and the air is exchanged frequently. And so this is a study by, according to a Department of Defense survey conducted with United Airlines. They're the ones who came up with the fact that because it takes just 6 minutes to filter out 99.99% of particles out of the air in the cabin, that your chances of getting COVID on a flight are almost zilch.
Now, with that being said, does that also speak to the safety factors that go on at the airport and at the terminal? Because, you know, I mean, you're exposed at the terminal through the TSA line. and then you get on the plane. So I'm guessing that speaks to good safety habits there as well.
As usual, Mr. Man on the Street, yeah, that's an excellent point. This speaks only to the airplane itself, and it doesn't speak to anything about the terminal or checking in or anything. I've flown three times round trip, in mostly in the second half of the summer, and you know, all I can say is my philosophy at the airport, and fortunately they put these all over, at least in Portland and Seattle and Sacramento where I was, every time I see a hand sanitizer thing, I just use it. If I've touched anything since the last time I've used anything, I just use the hand sanitizer. And, you know, the skin falls off of the back of your hands eventually. But at least the key here is you're touching a lot of surfaces that other people are touching. So if you wear a mask and you keep your hands clean and you don't snuggle up next to somebody that you've never met before, why, then I think you're in fairly good shape there. And what they're kind of saying is, if you take your own precautions, once you get on the airplane, we got you.
Got it. All right. Don't touch
it. All right. One more story here before we call it the news quits. The governor has sent a team to out-of-state theme parks. He's getting a lot of heat from the big theme parks in California. They want to reopen. Some of the parks in other states have reopened. So Governor Newsom has sent folks. He announced this past week. He has sent folks to other parks in other states to see how what they're doing, right, wrong, and whatever. Hopefully in to take another step in the direction of opening the parks in California. So as we mentioned last week, the theme parks in California play a big role in California tourism. They have a lot of pull. And right now, I'm sure they are all pulling to get their doors open. Although, as we have pointed out, the public's willingness to go back to theme parks has been lukewarm at best. Anyway, and that's your travel news for today.
Smarter Traveler segment is up next. We'll be talking about a Wi-Fi security warning from the FBI. Some stuff you need to consider, some precautions. That's next on the Travel Guys. On the boats, on the planes, on the trains, we're coming to wherever one of these days.
Maybe.
It's the silliest radio show on the radio, because who would be talking about traveling when there isn't any? It would be the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark and Tom. Welcome back, and it's time for our Smarter Travelers segment of the program. Mark, let's get to it.
You know, I think we could have a listener gathering. We could, late at night, after everybody has gone home, we could go around in our cars and drive around the Arden Fair parking lot and have a parade or something.
A parade. You know,
pretend like we're traveling places. We could.
Sure.
I don't know. I've kind of lost my mind here. Anyhow, thanks to all the folks who are listening to this old travel show here while there is no traveling, because someday travel and all of the things that it represents, like 10% of the economy, will be back. And when it does come back, we will be here. The FBI has reported a 300% increase in reported cyber crimes in the U.S., since the COVID-19 pandemic began. So not only are more people at home, can't travel, but more people are at home, period, with time on their hands, I guess, good guys, bad guys, and otherwise. So three times as many of them are bothering us. And
so what do we do? What do we do about that?
Well, this is in particular with hotels. And now, you know, Tom, hotels now are promoting, hey, if you're at home and you can't get your work done at home and you need a quiet place to work and you can't go to your office, we'll sell you a hotel room for the day at a reduced rate. You can come and use the high-speed Wi-Fi. We've got room service. We've got, you know, a fitness room if it happens to be open, and maybe a pool. We had all these amenities and stuff, a nice bed if you want to take a nap during lunch. I mean, we've got all of these things, and, you know, maybe if you can afford to do that, that would be a great idea. Well, this has brought some people into hotels that don't normally go into hotels. And, of course, that on top of vacation takers who sometimes are not the most careful. And so the FBI has put out this report. You can find a copy of it at from our friends at Travelers United. It's at travelguysradio.com if you want to read the whole thing. But it talks about the fact of it's pretty easy to hack you in a hotel. First of all, hackers set up duplicate hotel sites. I've seen these in several places. You'll go to log on to the Marriott, and it says Marriott, and there's two of them. And you have to look fairly carefully to figure out which one is the right one, or sometimes even call the front desk. So if that ever happens, be careful, because what you've got there is a duplicate site that as soon as you go may be picking up every keystroke you do or anything like that. If you're at the front desk and you're checking in, don't let the hotel employee, if they mention your room number, ask for another room. Because, again, anybody within distance would know what room that you're going to be in. This makes hacking you a little bit simpler. What can you do to prevent it? You can install a high-quality firewall on your devices. That's one thing. A VPN. This is a virtual private network. Now, this will be Greek to a lot of people who are listening to the show, but if you just remember, VPN is a great way to protect yourself, to create a network. Think about it as a cellular phone hotspot. It's a network only for you. So a VPN, ask your grandson or whomever helps you with your technical stuff about a VPN if you typically use a lot of websites when you're traveling. Consider two-step authentication. This is something that I've personally gone to protect some of my information. Protect your passwords. Obviously, you know, the simple things about changing them all the time and stuff like that. But anyway, this is kind of a serious thing. The FBI doesn't always issue warnings like this. They say 95% of cybersecurity breaches are due to human error, people not doing what's necessary to prevent the breaches. So travelguysradio.com is where you can find all of this. And if you're not a real technical person, just remember that when you're using the Wi-Fi in a hotel or any place else like that, an airport, something like that, be careful.
Outstanding. Great information, Mark. All right. Coming up, Donnie Anderson, a Sports Leisure road reporter, joins us. We taped this on Friday. She was one of the first to fly over to Hawaii, and she's going to give us a play-by-play as to how it went, and that's coming up. Join us for that and more as we continue here on The Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano. We are the Travel Guys here on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And by golly, Mark, Hawaii is now kind of open. People have been able to start traveling there since this past Friday. And you got us a hookup to talk directly with someone you know, who's an islander herself, and let's find out what's going on over there.
Well, and it's not very often on the Travel Guys, you know, that you get to be a guest 2 weeks in a row. But Donnie Anderson, right, who joined us last week to talk about the train in Sacramento, Donnie has headed off to the islands. And in fact, she arrived in Hawaii on the first day that visitors could go back. So, Donnie, welcome back to the program.
Aloha.
And so you are still on Oahu, correct?
I am.
And your long weekend will come to a close here. What it is, so folks know here, you're not on vacation. What takes you back to the island?
Well, I'm from the island, and all my family is here still. And I just had a new grandbaby. Well, actually, yeah, so I was really anxious to come see her. But even then, prior to that, I was planning to come back earlier this year, and then COVID happened, so I had to reschedule my flight back home, you know, a few times. And once they opened up without the quarantine, I jumped, you know, I just booked it for that day.
So you jumped on it the very first day so you could go see your new grandbaby. Now, you flew over on Hawaiian, right?
Yes, I did.
First of all, before you could go to the islands, you had to do something special. Tell us about that.
Yes, they required, in lieu of having to quarantine for 14 days, if you had taken a COVID test within 72 hours of your arrival date and it was negative, you could bypass the 14-day quarantine. I'm with Kaiser, so I was able to acquire a test, you know, within that time frame. That went relatively smoothly, not so with some other people. I think what I'm hearing, I heard the lobby of the gates and everything, some people are having trouble trying to get those tests before, you know, during that required time. That was one frustrating part for them.
To share here, you have to have a negative test within 72 hours of the time your flight departs from your last city. So if you were from Sacramento, most of the time people are now flying nonstop. So from the time that your flight is going to depart, you back up 72 hours. In that window, your test has to come back as being negative. So you only have to get a test, but you have to get it and get the results back. Were folks over arriving in the islands without the results or just having trouble accessing them? Or
I believe some people were arriving without the results, and they were going to be doing follow-up in Honolulu with that, with those people. Of course, I had my results already in hand when I got on the plane. But and some people didn't even, you know, they couldn't get the test before. So they're going to be have to provide that, you know, the test and everything and do the uploading and all that on the website.
So you had the stuff that you had the test that you needed. So when you got off the airplane, did it go smoothly for you?
It did. You know, you go to a station and the gal looks at your ID and all that. And everything was uploaded to the state of Hawaii website. You know, my documentation, they want a photo, you know, you upload a photo. You to upload your test results, and I've done that.
You had to do that yourself before you left. You had to go to a website, create an account, and then when you got your results, you have it. There's a code number, obviously, something that identifying factor, and you had to put all that information in yourself so that when you got there, they would be able to access that.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Then when you got there, it went fairly smoothly. Yes. No.
It did. You know, what ended up happening, I had my my documents uploaded. People working there, she said, I just need to see your printed negative results. I'm like, okay, but it's uploaded. She goes, no, I want to see your printed one. And so she was, you know, flipping through her paperwork there. And when I showed her mine, because I had one printed, you know, as well. The whole process for me only took about 15 minutes. So I thought, well, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. But they had over 8,000 people come in yesterday. And there were a lot of people, long lines on all islands, from what I understand. So I think I got lucky that we were like the second to land.
Donnie, I have a couple of questions for you. Number one, the flight over on Hawaiian Airlines are they not selling the center seat? What was the plane experience like? Everybody masked. How did that go?
Okay. On Hawaiian, they do not sell the center seat, and everybody is masked. And if you have a shield or a one of those vent masks, they gave you, you know, a regular cloth mask and said, you know, you weren't allowed on the plane. So it was a very nice experience because it's not as packed in as it can be. You know, I've been on some flights where everybody's, you know, every seat's full. I just felt, you know, it was really great. And Hawaiian still served their hot meal. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do beverages. They just handed out bottled water. So that was actually really nice.
Okay, good. So you got your hot meal. So you're saying that if you have a shield, that's not good enough. They want a mask, huh?
They want you to cover your face, yes.
So you can't use like a bandana or, as Donnie mentioned, one of the masks that have the ventilators in them and stuff like that, because basically that's like wearing the mask over your mouth and not over your nose.
There you go. And the other question I had was, did I understand correctly that there were some people that you kind of overheard that didn't get tested ahead of time, so they're going to have to get tested in the islands there somewhere? Did I understand that correctly?
You know, as far as those who did not have the test results yet, they would, in Hawaii's eyes, have to do the quarantine, right, for 14 days until such time they produced the documents that show their negative test. So, you know, there was that option. So in theory, there were some people on there that were going to opt in for, you know, for the quarantine, you know, instead. But
yeah. If you lived in the islands, it might not be so tough to go quarantine in your home, but still seems like a lot of trouble if there was a way around it. So let me ask you, you're in the islands, you've gotten through the gauntlet, you've run the security gauntlet, you're free to go now. You're on one of the first planes on the first day that tourists can come back to the Hawaiian Islands in like 6 months. Nothing like this has ever happened before. So what did it feel like? Did Oahu feel different? Did the airport feel different? Tell me about that.
It did. You know, not only, you know, just the fact that they're, you know, just kind of routing you through the airport to go a certain way, to go through the different check station for your documents, but even getting off, you know, in the airport itself, it just seemed, you know, really empty. A lot of the gates, you know, were just, there's nothing, no one's there. So it does feel different. We went out to breakfast this morning. It's never, you know, it's not as crowded as it normally is where we, you know, when we've been to this place before. So it does feel different. I haven't gone into the areas like Waikiki where there are a lot of tourists and everything, but it did feel different. It's actually, nice, but it's not as
cool. You have family and stuff. Yeah, exactly. You have family and stuff there.
What's the feeling of the local people? Are they, you know, there's been two schools of thought here. Some people in Hawaii are really happy that tourism is basically gone. And, of course, all the people who work in tourism or any job that's related to tourism, which is a lot of the workforce there, is on the other side. So what do you sense? Do you get a feeling for how things are restarting and what the vibe is?
First of all, personally, I have two children work for the, in the industry, you know, they work for the airline. So they are, you know, anxious for it to get, you know, get pick up again. I think they want it to open up, you know, because this island is just dying. Restaurants are closing, you know, small businesses, you know, are just being shut down because they just don't have the business. So the people that I know, my family and all that, really are hoping for, you know, this tourism to get started again.
What it points out too, Tom, is that, and Donnie, is that tourism's tentacles are far reaching now, especially in a place like, I mean, there's no bigger example than Hawaii in terms of the percentage of their revenue that comes from tourism. I mean, you might work, I use this example often, you might work down at the laundry, and the laundry gets 70% of its business from 8 hotels in Waikiki. So those hotels are gone, or they're not having any customers. They're not sending in any laundry. The people who aren't staying in those hotels, so therefore the laundry only needs 3 employees instead of 15. And guess what? You're not one of those 3. So you don't work in tourism per se. You work at a laundry. But if that laundry doesn't get business from tourism, then they don't need you. You don't get a paycheck. And so it's the second generation and third generation people who are a little bit, you know, they don't look at their job as being a tourism job, but the reality is that if there are no tourists,
it's all connected.
They got no job. And also a lot of those jobs involve salary plus gratuity. So no tourists, not only no salary, but no gratuity either. Any last things before, any last thing that you want to mention before I let you go, Donnie?
I did want to say a couple of things as far as, you know, people that are planning to go and doing the paperwork and all that. One thing that a lot of people did not understand, but we learned at the gate, was that they're going to need a second, what they call a QR code. When you do the documentation from Honolulu, from Sacramento to Honolulu, let's say, they give you a QR code for that. And that's what they want because it has all the information for it. And then, if you're going from Honolulu to Maui, you have to have another QR code for that as well. So a lot of people were scrambling, you know, finding out about that to, you know, to get that information and do the proper questions online so they could get that second QR code.
This is kind of what we've talked about pretty much all during COVID, is that it's really important here that you do your homework. You've really got to know what you have to have, because otherwise you're in the middle of the ocean. And if you don't have what you need, you're facing a 14-day quarantine, or at least a few days in a hotel quarantining while you get it all worked out. I mean, really and truly, this is not the kind of situation that you want to, oh, it'll take care of itself when you get there, because the landscape is littered over the previous months with people who have gone to Hawaii thinking, well, you know, once I get there, it'll be fine. And it hasn't been fine. And then they have to turn around and pay their own way back because their plane ticket is, you know, 3 weeks later. It can be a mess. So really and truly, at TravelGuysRadio.com, you will find a link to a thing called Safe Travels Hawaii Quick Facts, and we'll tell you, at least as of a couple of days ago, this changes on a regular basis. So if you go and you get information off the website and you're traveling in a month, you probably should visit the website at least 2 or 3 more times before you travel to make sure that the qualifications haven't changed. So, Donnie, lots of aloha in Hawaii.
Yes. Lots of aloha. I'm enjoying it. It's a great day. Thank you.
You're welcome. Travel safely, Donnie.
You know, the line about the landscape being littered with people that plan poorly is such a great visual. Yeah, I have one thing to add now. If you listen to the interview there, all of it, you know that Donnie is from the islands. Her family lives there, and she's gone to visit. And if you plan to be going to the islands for vacation and you want to do stuff, you know, you better do your homework in regards to what's going to be open, what's going to be available. Will there be luaus at your particular hotel if that's what you want to do, or scuba diving or whatever? So, because it would be, you know, really disappointing to get there and find out the only thing you can do is, you know, poolside at the hotel. All right, coming up next here on the Travel Guys, it's Mark with just one man's opinion and other great stuff here on the Travel Guys. Welcome, everyone. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Thanks for joining us. And we do this from time to time, so let's get to it. It is time, my friends, for Just One Man's Opinion. Here's Mark Hoffman. Mark?
For the last several months on radio and cable TV, we've been peppered by messages from a group of ambulance chasers, I mean lawyers, looking to help people sue the Boy Scouts of America. There's little doubt some scouts were abused by scout leaders in the past, and it's time for justice to be served. The victims deserve their day. Here's another take. When I was a kid, Boy Scouts were a lifeline to things I would likely never have experienced if I hadn't become a scout. My mother raised three children without a man in the house. When I was old enough, she encouraged me to get into scouts. What a gold mine for an 11-year-old boy. You see, without scouting, I would never have gone camping or learned to fish, set up a tent or make camp in the snow, or do 100 other things boys learn to do when they're with their dads out in the woods. Without a dad, Boy Scouts filled in quite nicely. Life experiences and memories I will always cherish. For what seems like forever now, we are barraged by radio commercials and even 30-minute programs on TV, making sure those who were wrong take advantage of this window of opportunity to get justice. Meanwhile, every boy who scouts helped turn into a man, every man who gave his time to help that part of the circle of life keep turning for boys like me, are reminded about this black eye on scouting. It's time for a little balance. Next time you see or hear one of those pleas for victims to come forward, know there are thousands, if not millions, of boys and girls whose lives were enriched by the time they've spent in scouting. Perhaps it's time for some of us to stand a little taller to make sure the public knows the whole story. To Scoutmaster Norm Root and all the other men who helped create some amazing memories for the boys of Troop 98 many years ago, thank you, truly thank you for helping us grow into men. And that is just one man's opinion.
Well, Mark, I'm really impressed. You remembered your scout's name, your scout leader's name, and your scout group number. I mean, I did a little scouts when I was young too.
Yeah.
I didn't get past the Cubs, but I could not tell you for the life of me what our scout number was and. You know, I enjoyed it a lot, too.
We were backed by a church over on Pope Avenue, I hope I'm saying that I'm getting in the direction right. I think it was Northminster Presbyterian Church, small church.
Mm-hmm.
And we met there every week. And I think by backing us, I think they provided the, you know, the meeting space and maybe a place to store our stuff and things like that. But, man, what a great experience. I mean, really and truly, I would have lost a lot of things. And it just, I mean, I realize, you know, obviously there were some problems, but it just, man, it's just every time they come on television or the radio with that, I just think of the fact that, you know, scouts meant something so much different to me. So.
Well, I think you made a good point, and I think the point is simply this, is don't, if you have a young man or a young girl, a young boy or young girl that may have some interest in scouting, don't let the stuff that you hear on the radio or TV, the bad stuff, turn you away. You know, investigate it for yourself, and scouting is still a great organization. Okay, we are the Travel Guys. You can follow along at travelguysradio.com. Links to the stuff that we talk about on the air you can find there. Mark, I see from afar here virtually on my FaceTime you're holding another piece of paper in your
hand. These are two stories that I thought were kind of the most interesting thing this week, and you know, you don't always get time at the end of the show. It's you always have a couple of things that, you know, if you have time for them we'll do this, and if you don't, why, then we won't. Qantas Airlines decided to get rid of a bunch of beverage carts, basically, that they used in first-class service on a number of their airplanes over the years. So, I mean, if you've been on long-haul aircraft, mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about. They're the things that the flight attendants haul down the aisle. In the old days, the meals were in there. Right. Now it's mostly just beverages, and I'm guessing in first class there probably are, you know, they probably store some other things like the little cheap blankets and some of the other small first class amenities. Anyway, Qantas, for some reason, decided that instead of just getting rid of these things, from the retired older 747s, they would put the drink carts up for sale. And amazingly enough, if you didn't get online and try to get one in the first 10 minutes that they were available, you didn't get one. And they wow. were not cheap. They were there were two of them. There was the half-size cart that sold for $975 or 170,000 of the points from their frequent driver flyer program. And or you could get a full cart for $1,500. And the thing was, they came stocked. They came with all the stuff in them, champagne and miniature bottles of white and red wine and smoked almonds and savory biscuits. That's the English or Australian word for cookies. Amenity kits, first class blankets, sleepwear, all of this stuff. Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, see, it would certainly be cool for you, Mr. Traveler.
Yeah, that's it. People out there going.
Those carts, I remember if they had the cart out, there was no going that way until the cart made it to the other end of the aisle.
Yeah, you had to plan your restroom stays. Yeah, exactly.
About 2 inches on each side. That's amazing. We have to assume that none of them came with any leftover meals of rubber chicken.
There's a picture. If you go to travelguysradio.com, you can see the whole article. There's a picture of everything that was in the cart. And for $974, I mean, you got a lot of hooch. I don't know how you'd get it across the ocean. But the other interesting story I saw this week was here is a company that specializes in getting travelers home from overseas or other countries who have coronavirus. And they sell memberships. And so if you travel internationally, because if you get this virus and you're in a foreign country, imagine getting you home is not an easy thing to do. And it's probably very expensive and very elaborate. And so these folks have a membership. So if you're truly paranoid and you insist on traveling during a pandemic overseas, but you're so paranoid that you're certain that you're going to get sick, then you pay these guys $999 and they cover you for 30 days. And they ship your raggedy butt home when the time comes.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. If there's a need, somebody will find a way to fill it. A couple of great articles. And of course, they're at travelguysradio.com.
Yeah. Well, and it just goes to show you. It's like the guy. Remember the guy we had on? It's been about a month and a half ago when we had the man with the ferry boat off the coast of England who was selling trips out to see the cruise ships that were docked. The empty cruise ships that were docked offshore, and because he was an old cruise ship worker himself and his wife was, he was able to go out and give people these amazing tours on these enormous ships from a little ferry boat. It's always, no matter what happens in the world, it's always bad for somebody, it's always good for somebody. Next week, a cooking show. Go to travelguysradio.com. Sign up for it. We'll see you then. Dance like nobody's watching.
All right, cooking with Mark and Paul, Mark and Paulette. All right, thanks, my friends. See you next time here on The Travel Guys.